host.
And we are live. Welcome to another episode of the Presidio Bitcoin, June 5th.
We're back.
Hey, guys.
Only 11 minutes late.
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute.
We missed an episode, and now today is jam-packed. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Steve's looking sharp, so you know you know that means he has something special to talk about.
He's talking to the suits.
Let's retweet our live stream.
You'll get those
numbers pumping.
I'll have to man the show here because I'm still not twittering.
You're still anti. Yeah.
You're talking on your shit. Yeah.
That's what.
Steve loves our show so much. He decides to watch the show while we're recording the show. So.
Oh my gosh, what am I doing? All right.
We got
a ton to go through.
We do.
So let's kick it off. I brought a little toy with me here.
He's going to cast
gadget.
A spell.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like blue pants. Well.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I've been told it's feminine, but I felt very confident using it this morning.
Yeah. But that's because you're confident in your masculinity, right?
Yeah, exactly. More confident the shirt was
pink. Gen Zers love a product like this. So what is this? It's the Cash App Wand, which is launched, I think, yesterday.
I saw it somewhere, yeah.
Either Wednesday or yesterday.
A couple days, yeah.
And it sold out in under 10 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
How many do you think they sold?
I'm shocked. 10,000.
How many do you think they sold?
100,000.
Max is right.
Yeah.
10,000. Okay. Batch one, 10,000.
Okay.
We'll see what the future holds, but with no marketing too. Yeah. So testing, I think, beforehand showed that it was super popular with Gen Z.
Okay.
Like the youth like it. Apparently they use it at raves and stuff.
Can we talk about exactly what it is?
To do what?
I also want to hear the fact, but
just so you can make payments with it. So the experience here, so you open Cash App on your phone.
Got it.
This has there's no battery in this. There's an NFC chip.
Okay.
Like a passive NFC chip. And you do a one-time activation. You just hold it on your phone. It activates. And then you don't need your phone anymore. And then it just acts like a debit card.
So, hey, so
you tap to pay. Anywhere Visa is accepted, you just tap to pay.
And so you could like go out on a run with this, not have your phone, and then you could tap to pay.
I'd like to see you try that, DK.
I went to Whole Foods this morning and I tapped to pay with this and it worked.
Oh, great.
And I felt very masculine doing so.
So and when you say the kids at raves, I assume, and I have some ideas now what they're using it for, but can they, it's like a way to enable like Cash App to like peer-to-peer payments or so, like how are they, like if it's
just tap. I mean, well, you need to have because the other side powers it, right?
So if they're buying
do you need a NFC? Essentially, receptacle, like seller.
Got it. So for like festivals and stuff, if people don't want to like bring their wallets and they still...
I hear the youth these days maybe don't bring their iPhones to festivals.
So. Interesting. Is that true?
I don't know.
Oh, that's very
helpful. That's what our stand-in producer told me this morning.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I was wondering, do you know any of the history of sort of... I mean, it's kind of a radical form factor for payments. Is there something that kind of was the driving force of why this would be like kind of where did this come from?
I don't exactly know. I actually think it will be a very powerful and compelling story to tell. So I was chatting with Thomas this morning, the head of hardware at Block.
Did saying, he make this?
Well, I asked, what's the Genesis story? Because I think it's like super novel and compelling.
I think it's
very Cash App. It's very on brand for Cash App.
But I would not think of Thomas with this thing.
Well, good business people know their customers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, and there's a lot of youth. I mean, Cash App also like a few weeks ago launched a teenager product. I
saw that. Yeah.
You know, I don't know all the details, but like, so
they're going after like younger demographic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they already had younger and, but now they have even better products for teenagers. So, so I don't know the story, but I was telling Thomas that like whatever the story is, it's almost certainly compelling. I mean, even if it's not compelling, if it leads to this, it's still compelling. Like whatever the story is, it's compelling.
Whether
it's top down, bottoms up, or a team, or however, right? AI, whatever this was
manifest
is compelling. So I think, Block should be telling that story, like get it out on social media. But yeah, so it's actually a very simple product, but it's one that, I think selling out 10,000 with no marketing is just a starting point for it.
I mean,
and you can imagine, this isn't the end, it's the beginning. You can imagine many other form factors, ones that fit different styles, because this is all about style and status, style,
swag.
Yeah. So you can imagine lots of different designs.
So the big question, so I mean, obviously there's a lot of ways this can go. How far are we from being able to load some Bitcoin on here?
Yep.
And tap to pay with a little bit of Bitcoin over Lightning? Because now you have my attention. I would carry a wand if I could do that.
Yeah.
Hopefully something
I've actually had two conversations this morning about that. One from an engineer that works on this and from a friend. So that's an obvious next step as well.
That'll be super cool.
And again, kind of like with Cash App, you know, paying Lightning invoices, whether it's coming from your dollar balance or from your Bitcoin balance, either way. Mm-hmm. So, not sure if or when, but it's obviously a logical next step too. Yeah.
But notably, this doesn't have an interface, right? It's not powered. So there's no interface. You can't like dynamically decide, I want to use it for dollars, I want to use it for Bitcoin. You kind of have a device that does a thing, right?
In theory, it could be done, but you'd have to like push new standards throughout the ecosystem, right? You could have the payment terminal pop up and say that, but that's obviously a lot more involved making that happen.
That'd be cool though.
So I think that's I think it's a cool product, and will probably be really successful for Cash App. I don't know what their plans are for like how many SKUs they'll have, how many designs, and how much. Like with their cards, they allow you to customize it.
Oh yeah,
each person.
I like this.
Right. So I don't know if that's like practical for this, but maybe they can have contests or something. I don't know. Yeah, I think it could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean,
do you think this will give rise to other kind of card issuers doing stuff like this? Because it does seem like if it turns out to be incredibly popular, card issuers are always looking for like an edge, a different marketing angle, a rewards program, et cetera. So like, will this sort of instigate an ecosystem outside of Block even?
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly could. I mean, what I think is going to instigate an ecosystem even more than, you know, the swag factor is the 5% Bitcoin cash back. I was just thinking about that. Like I was talking to someone else about that. I mean, if you could start to combine some of those things, like any payment I make, all of a sudden you get the Bitcoin cash back. There are a lot of reward programs. And I think I haven't gone super deep on this thing. Lava announced their card this week, which is pretty cool. It's mm-hmm. other people. But like the reality is, rewards programs are very complex, and I've never seen anything that's always consistently 5% cash back. I think that's like on the high end what Lava's offering now, which is great. But
I think they offer 3%, and then for certain types of spends, it's 5%.
Right, but with Bitcoin on Cash App, if I'm paying, at whatever a Square terminal, getting 5% cash back Bitcoin every time, that is really cool. I will say though, I did notice, I was playing with this. I don't know if this is I'm in a testing series or whatever, but in the past, when I had paid a Lightning invoice using a dollar balance on Cash App, it was still free. I'd paid a Lightning invoice with Cash App using dollars. If I used Bitcoin, it was free, but this time with dollars, I think there's like a 0.9% fee. So that was kind of interesting to see that they're like playing with monetization on that. But even either way, it's still radically lower than the status quo. But getting that 5% cash back plus some swag, now I'm interested.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Next thing I'm excited to talk about, and I think you guys are too, let's talk about Surge, which is a new product.
Yeah. Launched right here in the Pursuit of Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's actually, let's start with just the Genesis story, which I think is pretty cool. Last year, we had a new member join Pursuit of Bitcoin named Yash. And I think he visited Bitcoin Park, and that's how he lives in the Bay Area, but he visited Bitcoin Park, and that's how he learned about PB.
Oh.
I think Rod was like, assumed he knew about PB, and he didn't. But then as soon as he checked it out, he's like, I've got to work from here.
Yeah.
So he started working from here, and then we learned about, I think it was called Surge back then too, but maybe we learned about the product he was developing. It's certainly the product that interests us because it's Bitcoin-backed loans or credit line. So it's one that we've talked about quite a bit on the show. There's a number of products out on the market. And then the really interesting part, though, is then Michael joined PB and wanting to start a company, wanting to do something new in Bitcoin. And they met and they clicked and now they're co-founders.
Yeah,
cool. So it's the first time that matchmaking has occurred at PB. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, what is Surge? I kind of already led with it, but it's a Bitcoin-backed line of credit. So not structured as loans. It's structured as a line of credit.
And it's and importantly, a self-custodied one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've talked about Strike and Coinbase and Lava, of course, on this show a lot, and I think several others as well. We're all investors in Lava. We really liked Lava's original pitch of being self-custody. They switched to custodial, probably for good reasons, and there's benefits to that. But what's, I think, why we're all intrigued by Surge is we still see tremendous value yes. in self-custody Bitcoin-backed lending and no KYC Bitcoin-backed lending. The question is, can you deliver a great user experience? Can you deliver competitive rates, right? Because if you can't do either of those, then, well, good yeah. attempt at self-custody, but it's going to be few and far between.
Right.
I think why we're kind of excited about Surge is they definitely have delivered on a great UX yes. For onboarding and usage. We've all used it. We can talk about that right now. And the rates they're offering right now are competitive. I mean, I think it's we'll see over time as they grow, can they keep offering competitive rates? But they are competitive. So it seems like a pretty compelling
product.
And
are they something in the order of 6 and change percent for a floating one and 9.99 for a fixed? Is that right?
Yeah. Something like that.
Yep. And they use their own liquidity pool. So they're not using Morpho or any other DeFi for the markets. They're building their own, which of course, if they're successful, that will...
Their balance sheet.
I'm sorry?
Or they have their own liquidity providers or they're from their own balance sheet right now?
No, I believe that's their own. They have, it is not their own balance sheet. They have liquidity providers.
Interesting.
They're building their own yeah. pools.
But their pools, yeah. it's not like a DeFi pool. Like this is like...
Yeah, it's not Morpho. It's not whatever those other ones are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like human beings shaking hands.
Okay. It's an old school.
It's an old, I believe. I'm not an expert, but my understanding, they're not using Morpho. They're not using DeFi. They are striking partnerships with people.
Got it.
Actually, what they have, if you go to one of their dashboards, I think it's the Earn dashboard.
Got it.
I think you, all of us can participate. I mean, I think it's open.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah, okay. My understanding was, yeah, it's more peer of the model of what like a Morpho was trying to be. Like anybody in the market who wants to earn yield can do so in that way, but it's not like
but it's homegrown.
Yeah, so it's more like a peer yeah. of that, not dependent upon it.
Now, how much they've like shaked hands with people with money to supply, I don't know. Maybe zero.
Yeah.
That's actually one thing should have tested out for today, but we'll cover it again on that side. But yeah. we all tried the consumer, like the the lendee scenario, and I think we're all impressed. So like, how does this work? Well, you know, you download a mobile app. You can immediately take out a loan, but then you quickly learn, okay, I gotta deposit Bitcoin into the app to as collateral for the loan. It's like a 50% LTV. So if I want to, in my example, I took out $100 line of credit. And so I had to put $200 worth of Bitcoin in the app. So I did that. And then I was able to pretty much immediately get the line of credit. No KYC. So very simple onboarding. I mean, literally what I just said, I don't think there's any other like knobs or bells, whistles, knobs I had to do or information.
Simple is good, It's extremely,
And I had to choose, I guess, I had to choose between variable rate and fixed rate loan. It's a 1 year term, or I keep saying loan. It's a line of credit, but I mean, you know, you have to choose variable or fixed rate within that 1 year duration. Believe I chose variable rate. And as DK said, it's like 6 and change and 9 and change for those two.
Yeah.
And then, you know, their UI shows the accrued interest in a very simple way. So you know how much, the last I checked, I owed 3 cents. So
that's what I'm saying I owe. Yeah. I was looking at the interface right now.
Yeah. I did mine last night. It's only 1 cent so far. But.
Yeah. And then you have USDC. Mine is on Base. I think they support one other, Ethereum. I think Ethereum as well.
Both, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, then you have USDC that you can transfer elsewhere and use. And that's kind of it. Yeah. And so it was just a really simple user experience. I can explain a little bit about how it, like we said, it's self-custody. I'm sure some people, especially folks in the Bitcoin side, are like, how is it self-custody? What's the design? Yeah. What's the assumptions? What are the mm-hmm. risks with that? There are some, so we'll speak to that. Let's speak to that now. And then I like to talk about the USDC and what you do with these dollars and stuff like that. But yeah, how does it work? So it's an interesting application of Taproot. So if you're familiar with Taproot on Bitcoin, it was the last consensus rules change to Bitcoin 5 or so odd years ago with a bunch of like really important fundamental technical changes. The adoption of it is mixed at this point. There's been some unintended uses of it, which have faced a lot of criticism. A lot of the imagined use cases are still to be done. But things like BitVM and Arcade use it, and I think an inarguably positive way. Mm-hmm. Surge uses it. So... and Surge uses one of the use cases that was imagined from the get-go. And that is you can have multiple spending scripts for your Bitcoin, which you've always been able to do with Bitcoin. But what Taproot allows you to do is that you can have as many scripts as you want, different ways to spend your Bitcoin. And you only need to reveal one when you spend. So, because if you have to reveal all of them, it's both a privacy issue, but it's also a cost issue because all those opcodes have to go in your transaction and you're paying fees for stuff you're not even using. Right. So with Taproot, you only have to put the opcodes, the script from the way you're actually spending at that time on chain. So what they've done is they have three different spending options, spending scripts for a loan that you lock your Bitcoin in. One is, like, let's say I'm taking out the line of credit and you're on the other side of it. You're the one providing the dollars. So the first spending option is we both mutually agree to close out the loan. That's like the happy path case. That's the expected case. And so that's one of the spending options. The second spending option is liquidation. And so just like with any of these lines of credit or loan options, if the value of collateral drops below a certain threshold and you don't up the Bitcoin, then it's going to get automatically liquidated, you lose your Bitcoin. That's the second spending option. The third is an exit, like a unilateral exit. And that's if like Surge disappears. Let's say they go bankrupt or they just turn their computers off or they go away. And let's say the lender goes away too. Mm-hmm. Like in our scenario, you just go away. Well, then let's say it's not liquidated. Well, then you're stuck with... Right. The first two spending options won't work because right. if you're not around to cooperate and if it didn't trigger liquidation, well, even if it did trigger liquidation, I lose my Bitcoin. So how do I get my Bitcoin back? Well, if you wait a year, then I unilaterally can get my Bitcoin back.
Right.
So that's the three options. And then importantly, with Taproot, the design gives you all these like, it's within a tree. Each of these spending paths is like a leaf of a tree and you can have as many as you want. But with Taproot, there's also what's called a direct key spend path, which allows for a more efficient way to spend. Efficient meaning takes up less space in a transaction, lower fees. And in most use cases, it's powerful and valuable to have that. But it's undesired in this case, because with the direct key spend, it can be an N of N multi-sig. And it could be hidden from you at the lender. So in theory, they could have a secret way to spend the money, or someone could have a secret way to spend the money, and you as the lendee wouldn't know what it is. Yeah. So they use what's called a NUMS. It's like a provable way. It proves to everyone in the world that you cannot spend that key. There's still a key provided, but it's an impossible key to spend.
What is this? I haven't heard.
Number up your sleeve, or yeah. Number up my sleeve.
Okay, is NUMS, this
NUMS? Number up my sleeve.
Commonly used. I haven't come across this.
Yeah, it's like standard in cryptography.
Okay.
Yeah, this is not like a Surge innovation or a Bitcoin innovation. It's standard in cryptography. Okay. They're just applying it here.
Okay.
So it's provable to anyone in the world. If you see one of these contracts, it's mined in Bitcoin, everyone can, you can prove there's only these three spending paths,
right?
And you know what they are. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the security here. So anyone in the world can observe that. Or at least you, as the person putting your Bitcoin into the smart contract, you can observe that it's not being rehypothecated. No one else is rug pulling you or taking it. It's still there. You also can't get it though either,
right?
Unless you meet one of these criteria. But no one else can take it from you in an unexpected way. Mm-hmm. You're only losing it if the liquidation criteria is met, which is something you should be aware of upfront.
Right.
So that's very reassuring. Now, as we all know, what is the liquidation criteria? What does that mean? We all know that that includes
an oracle
price. And so it needs an oracle. How do you know what the triggering level is? Well, it's some kind of like Bitcoin price in US dollars or against some measure. And that is where they incorporate Coinbase Base. So they have a smart contract on Base, which provides this oracle. And I didn't study it in great detail, but I believe they have multiple oracles. And it's my chatted with them before the show. I think that those smart contracts have not been audited yet, but they hope to audit them in the future. That's one thing. One thing I didn't clarify though is whether that's completely on-chain base. Like, could we go observe now to see how many oracles there are? Who are the oracles? If yes, great. If no, then is there a way to be transparent around that? I think that would be important.
Yeah.
I'd like to, before I took out like a substantial amount, I'd like to know that there's multiple oracles, and if they disagree with each other, what happens? And who are they?
Are they
Are they big brands that are staking their reputation on it, or are they staking money against it? Or what's to prevent one or more oracles from lying and causing havoc? So I don't know the answer to that yet. That would need to be that needs to be figured out, or at least on our part.
If anyone's listening in the show, like from Surge or anything, want to explain this, please leave us in the comments.
Yeah, Surge, if you're listening. Or I said I had a product idea for our show.
Let's do it.
Let's just drop it right now. Because
drop it, yeah.
I want to make our show AI native, right? So when we don't always have the answers, right? And often when we're talking, we're like, oh, I wish I knew that or whatever. And it's like, oh, well, let's remember to look it up later. And then... it would be great if we had AI listening along right now and then could we'd have to test out the experience. It either auto responds to what we're saying, but we've learned from Ori and other stuff that can get pretty noisy.
Or we invoke it.
So maybe we invoke it, right? Yeah. Which is the experience that DK and I have on another app we'll talk about in another show, where you have to at mention the agent. And that has been a better experience, I think, when you have to explicitly call it out. It's less noisy. But in any case, and then, we have and when driving to the show today, I called Matt Velez, dropped this idea, and I think he was already thinking along these lines. Because I was imagining incorporating it in this chat window. So our audience knows, we can see on the display here in the studio. And DK, you can't see this, right?
I can't see this, right?
But you could probably pull up YouTube. But anyway, now you can't see it, but we can see, chat. So Matt Blaz just sent a chat and other people have chat. Every week we have people chatting. You can imagine AI responding there. But I doubt YouTube has an API that lets us do that. So, Matt Blaz has created Babel Agent, which is translating our show right now for people.
Right.
But you can imagine having a chat there. and then incorporating AI. And then what would be great about that is it would give us an opportunity to iterate quickly the right experience. Because you can also imagine if AI was popping up in this window, we'd quickly lose other people's comments and that would suck. So we'd have to tweak the experience.
Measured,
But I think it would be great to, you know, for the question we just had about the oracles or whatever. In fact, another behavior I've started developing is like driving to the office, especially on Fridays before the show. And I know some of the topics we'll be talking about and I might have some questions. So I'll just ask Grok because it's integrated into my car. Mm-hmm. And every single time I learn and I'm better prepared. So it's like super slick to be able to do that while driving in a, you know, a safe way.
It would also be really cool if you could do Matt with Babel Agent, you know, some additional features that potentially use MDK or something using Bitcoin. For example, imagine we could do various polls. I know, DK, you've always wanted to do games. But imagine if we could do something like, okay, you know, here are the topics we're going to discuss today. You know, 5 minutes, zap away. Highest zap, that's what we're covering next. And Babel Agent could like run that entire process for us. Create the invoices or whatever it is, like, you know, the Lightning address. Show in real time a little rendering of who's voting and how many sats they've stacked. I think there's a lot of cool stuff we could do to actually integrate Bitcoin into that AI experience on the show. So Matt, if you want to do some Bitcoin cool stuff in there, that'd be dope.
Billy says, I could have my AI watch the show and then ask questions to your AI. And then at the end, it could tell me what I watched. that's a very Billy comment. I love that comment, Billy.
Yeah.
So back to Surge. Another thing they let me know beforehand was that they do have Brandon Black or Reardon Code doing auditing for, I think, the Taproot and like the Bitcoin smart contract side. He's a perfect person to do it. Super technical, knows this stuff in and out, knows Taproot really well. He also worked at Lava in the past, so knows these types of products. So he's a you know, someone I would trust immensely. And looking at the at that design, so that's great news. I think coming soon that'll be published, that report. Back to the self custody and the risks. I think it's to my knowledge, it is the most trust minimized Bitcoin backed lending product on the market. I'm not aware of any, because the, you know, things like Unchained, you can be rugged if, you know, there's three keys, and if their key and that third party escrow key, they could collude and take your money. It's a spectrum. That's better than if it's just you're handing your Bitcoin over unilaterally to someone else. It's better than that. But I believe Surge is the most trust minimized solution. And I think it's pretty darn good. It's a really smart Taproot design. The dependence on Base. So, you know, I guess you have some risk in like, you know, Base as a system.
Right.
Base is on Ethereum. So, I mean, you're assuming Ethereum's working, Base is working, and the Oracle system's working. I think each of those three is quite low risk. You are accepting, you know, quite low risk times quite low risk times quite low risk. But
although you never know, we'll be talking about the Zcash later today. Important to understand. I assume, though, they wouldn't have to in the future depend on Ethereum. I mean, isn't Base its own blockchain now? I thought they kind of moved it off. Coinbase is just, it's a database, whatever.
Yeah, they've signaled in that direction. But, certainly in theory, Ethereum is not needed here. Well, but
one major question I have, so I didn't fully understand this, but when I spoke, I think with Michael at one point, I think, wasn't Michael at Coinbase at one time, that they were leveraging multi-party computation or MPC, which Coinbase, I guess, is very, you know, sort of the weeds on for their, I think, Bitcoin cold storage, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't fully understand which part of this is leveraging the multi-party computation. Is that the Bitcoin and the Base, like the smart contract, or?
I don't know. I didn't study the Base smart contracts at all. So my guess is it would be applied there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't study the smart contracts on either side.
Yeah.
But it's probably applied. Maybe it's the multiple Oracle design.
Yeah.
Assuming there's multiple Oracles, but
yeah, that'd be something for us to follow up. Because one of the questions,
if we had an AI native show, then exactly, AI could spit it out for us.
Because one thing I have a question on is, like, given that this seems relatively simple in design, obviously with trade-offs, but versus discrete log contracts, which is what Lava was originally going to do. And I've, you know, DLCs have been promising for a long time, but the fact that there haven't been a lot of products that have stuck around the market, none that I know of, suggested maybe that was harder than people thought. I'm curious why this simpler Taproot and MPC design has not been tried before.
Well, I don't know. Well, you know, I don't know their analysis of why they chose Base versus other smart contract platforms. But if there's good...
Or any of them. It didn't have to be Base, but like
but
anything like...
But that's my point. They clearly decided Base. I don't know their analysis, though.
Yeah.
But there must be reasons.
Volume.
Really for the Oracle problem, though, right? That's how they're solving the price.
But Max is asking why now. Well, I'm saying they chose Base. I don't know why they chose Base, but they clearly chose it for reasons, and Base is new.
It didn't
exist 3 years ago.
Interesting.
So assuming there's specific reasons they chose Base over like Cardano or something else, then that would explain why.
Is that still
why
around?
Now versus...
Yeah.
Oh, you don't daily trade Cardano?
Exactly, no. It's been a couple years since I've checked CoinMarket.
I have another question about the overall architecture, though. From the lender side. So, you know, one of the things that was an early challenge, I remember for Lava, I don't know if they ended up fully solving it, but they spent a lot of time trying to effectively, you need to know about the repayment of USDC in order to know if the conditions for the loan should be approved to be redeemed, right? If the loan can be settled. So usually Bitcoin only knows about Bitcoin, doesn't know anything about USDC. The base thing we've just been talking about is only talking about the Oracle problem for price, as far as I understand. And so there's this separate question of how do the liquidity providers, you know, ensure that the
well, I have no doubt that the smart contract on base does that, right? It would be very straightforward.
Well, my understanding is Surge has this separate signer network of where liquidity providers get to sign off on the fact that an action was taken. But I don't have all the full, I mean, something we've talked about with them for a long time, but I didn't know if you guys had further detail on.
Your AI would have to explain that.
Following up with them on that.
I mean, it would be very natural to do that on base, though. They could see SDC as native on base.
Yeah.
We have Yash in the chat, so maybe he'll drop something in there.
Because like the whole system needs to understand that redemption happened, right? That the loan was closed out. There has to be like some sort of agreement that thing happened, and it's either done computationally or via like, I think, the signer network. My understanding is with Surge, there's a signer network of liquidity providers who sign off and say that loan was properly repaid and the Bitcoin can be released, and that's sort of how the Bitcoin gets back.
Got it.
So it could be the MPC. But I think it's an important detail to understand better. And I wouldn't claim to be any type of expert on it, but I do think it's one that I'd want to understand better to sort of fully assess, kind of the architecture of the system.
So I think a couple high level points. I guess my position right now, I would definitely recommend to anyone interested in this, check it out. And, you know, check it out with like toy money, just to learn the product.
I definitely think
the user experience is compelling. What I know of the design and the trade-offs are good. But before you put serious money into it, you would want to do your own homework on the design. I mean, take what you learn from what we just said, but we also have questions, right? We don't have all the answers. Do your own homework to really understand. The other thing, and this is advice we'd given to Lava as well, is that right now you have to put, size of your line of credit, you have to put all your Bitcoin on your phone. I mean, you have to put it in the Surge app on your phone. And personally, crazy. I'd be comfortable up to a certain amount for that, but not like a lot, not even like a medium amount. Like, would you want like, I mean, everyone has small, medium, large is different for everyone, but like, would you want $10,000 or $50,000 of Bitcoin on your phone or hundreds of thousands of dollars? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Right. So, so I think bring your own wallet is, which I think DK coined that, but it's
killer feature.
Great concept. And I've you know, I showed those guys the new BitKey device with the display and everything, and suggested that not just for BitKey, but for, you know, pick the popular wallets. And it does require work. You got to get it. You got to partner with those companies and integrate. But it would be an amazing experience. Sick,
yeah. Yes.
Because
100%.
Not only for security, but also just like, even if someone's comfortable putting whatever, 10, 20K of Bitcoin on their phone, everyone would just prefer to just keep using the solution they're already using. So if I'm already using a Trezor, a Ledger, whatever system I have, a BitKey, it'd be nice just to leave it inside that. But that means that it needs to support the smart contract.
Yes.
So I think they are on board with that. So I'm sure it's just part of their roadmap. But I think that I can see them developing a market now with small to medium size lines of credit.
Yeah.
Which is super compelling in its own right. And then over time, it could grow larger. But I think you're going to see more demands like bring your own wallet, and also just better assurances on the security side, like the audits they're doing and anything else they can do around transparency.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this for years with Lava and now with Yash, but I really believe that if your value proposition is self-custody and effectively allowing anyone in the world, no KYC, to take out a loan, like if you want the old whales to come in, which I think they probably would, like bring your own wallet is like it's a non-starter with that. So I think that feature is going to be a game changer. And if they can integrate that well, it's going to be incredible. I do want to mention, and I think this will also begin to segue into a couple of other things as well, but DK, you brought up something in our chat this morning that we've all been talking about for a long time, which is, I think these lending products also, you know, one thing I've learned in my experience investing in companies is it's one thing to have an amazing technological product. I think one thing I, you know, had underestimated when I was younger and really appreciate the value of more now is making the product so simple for like one thing that someone actually needs to do. And, you know, we talked about, it's another potential topic, you know, Coinbase partnering with, you know, better for the Fannie Mae approved home loan, where if you can just make it super simple, someone put your Bitcoin here, loan process, boom, you can buy a house, done. Like reducing those frictions for actual use cases people want. I think there's a massive opportunity in the market for what you were asking for, DK, and what I've been asking for 6+ months, which is for people that want to basically take out loans against their Bitcoin to be able to buy either directly equities or exposure to AI stocks. So, you know, Google, Anthropic, XAI, OpenAI, et cetera, NVIDIA. I think that, this will maybe start to push us a little bit in like, you know, what's happening in the broader Bitcoin world with liquidity getting sucked into that. But I do think that whoever can sort of perfect an experience where you post Bitcoin, super easy to buy Google or super easy to buy Anthropic exposure, is going to absolutely make it rain. I have talked to several founders about building this. None have done it yet. Some wanted to do a more regulated way, like, you know, with the actual equities. But I'll just throw this out to Yash and Michael. I think someone has that opportunity to do this non-custodially. And it could be really, 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 really big. So,
there's baby steps towards this.
Yes, of course.
And it's already, we're not quite to what you're saying, sort of integrated into one product, one click kind of thing.
Anywhere.
But it's very close.
Yeah.
Because another announcement is Cash App supports USDC now.
Oh, that's right.
Have you played with this yet?
No.
It's by far the best stablecoin integration in the world.
Okay.
Because it shows up in your dollar balance.
So it's just like integrated. One unified account, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
So if you deposit USDC into Cash App, it just shows up where your dollars already show up.
Man.
You don't have to like, you don't have different balances. You don't even have to like conceptually think about, oh, this is TradFi dollars. And this is stablecoin dollars.
It's just dollars.
And I can only spend the TradFi dollars here. And I can only spend the stablecoin dollars here. It's just integrated.
Yeah, I love that.
So, and also, I think the layer ones are also fixed, right?
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second. I'm going to speak to the positives first and then the negatives.
No, that was a positive I was going to suggest.
Oh, this is a negative. But
okay.
Or I mean, we can talk about your positive and then my negative. But we'll start with my positive. So, I mean, well, the first positive is what I'm saying. Like the integrated balance is just a beautiful experience on Cash App side. And then it directly answers your question. It's two clicks, not one click. But I mean, like, you can like take a loan, just transfer it to Cash App and then buy NVIDIA stock. And it's like, so there's a few steps there, but they're all super fast and really not gated. I mean, if you're already KYC'd on Cash App, then it's just not gated.
Although that's for US users, obviously. So that's great for someone that has Cash App now. But
yeah, I'm just, I said, building blocks, baby steps. Yeah. I mean, obviously, hopefully Cash App's super successful, but we want more products than just Cash App. And there's a big world out there. But I'm just saying, like, we're getting very close. I mean, so after using Surge and after using the new Cash App stablecoin integration, it's watershed moment for me. It's like the first time that I've seen like real non-casino real world applicability of stablecoins.
Yep.
I get all the casino stuff. I get the motivations behind it. I know that it's a market. It's just not one that I've never been, you know, excited to work on or whatever. But here's a flow where it's like, this is, I just find this like super legitimate. There's a bunch of people who have Bitcoin. Their use case is savings. They don't want to spend it because it's savings. They don't want to spend it because they don't want to take a tax hit. But they do want to unlock liquidity. They do want some exposure in AI stocks or whatever investment they want to make. And now they can do so without any kind of registration process or BS around their Bitcoin. Like a lot of banks, you have Bitcoin, you're risky. Yeah. As opposed to, you have an asset. It's like, you're risky. So you don't want to tell a bank you have Bitcoin because usually that means you're a risky customer.
Yeah.
Here, you don't have to tell anyone you have Bitcoin.
Right.
They don't need to know who you are.
Right.
You can just post your Bitcoin, again, in this self-custody contract, and then you get dollars, which you can immediately transfer to Cash App, and then you're in the traditional finance system.
So that's
everywhere
huge.
You can spend dollars, you can now spend dollars. So real estate or any transaction you want. I think that's super fascinating. And like a really extreme example, and I was running this by DK this morning, like if you mentioned whales or OG Bitcoiners, whatever, who have a lot of Bitcoin. I mean, there's a segment of people who are, you know, all in on Bitcoin, or like the vast majority of their wealth is Bitcoin. And especially if they bought it early, it's like got very low cost basis. So, you know, they certainly are not keen to sell it and pay the taxes. But they either might want some liquidity to spend, or they might want to, even though they're huge Bitcoin believers, they might want some AI exposure. They might want to diversify or do some other investments. So if you can take out a no KYC self-custody loan against your Bitcoin, get that liquidity, and then like instantly buy NVIDIA or whatever stock you want to do, I think that's pretty compelling.
And I mean, that was a eureka for me. I had forgotten that Cash App had integrated stablecoin. So like that, to your point, the product
announced it, but it wasn't available until this past week.
One question I have on that though, because, you know, I think I've been thinking a lot about Lightning Network payments. I'm working on an update right now. And, you know, I think I saw David Marcus's, you know, his speech at the Bitcoin conference, where he basically was saying, after chatting with Miles, or maybe this was a podcast somewhere, he was like, it was fun for him or interesting to realize, oh shit, like, you know, supporting USDC on Solana or USDC on Ethereum, like the shitcoin networks, it's not, you know, they're no longer competing with Bitcoin. Like Bitcoin is value. We all understand that now. You know, these are just like alternative payment networks. Like if, you know, Visa and MasterCard and Amex and Discover and Solana and whatever, and like, you know, they run and, you know, you can do a dollar payment. Great. And so, you know, again, kind of pushing this idea, they're all intranets, Bitcoin and Lightning are intranets. They can hook them all up together. So I think it's a really smart and good move that companies like Lightspark and now Block and Cash App are integrating Bitcoin with all of the old shitcoin networks. And I think what we're seeing, they're just payment networks. They don't compete with Bitcoin. But one question I have on that is like, isn't that going to be an absolute cluster in terms of like, and I think maybe you even mentioned this, like you have all of these, I mean, I guess if Cash App handles it for you in the background, but like, you know, fees on Ethereum can spike. So if I've got USDC on Ethereum and it's like super expensive, but USDC on Base is like free, and like market making between all of these chains, I mean, it seems, I don't know, it just seems horrible.
Yeah, we've definitely talked about that before, and that is horrible. So let me get to the bad part of my experience. And that's because Cash App launched with USDC only on four chains. Arbiton.
On 4chan. I was like, what? USDC is...
Leave it to Miles though, to launch on 4chan. Exactly. But no, 4chained.
Exactly.
Arbitrum, Polygon, Ethereum, and Solana.
No base. Ooh.
Bold
move.
So to prove this out, I sent $25 of my line of credit from Surge to Cash App, and poof, I lost my money.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
You just lost it?
Yeah. Because it's USDC base. And I sent it to...
Oh, man. Okay, I take back what I said. He's not ready for prime time. No.
And so, Miles called me a noob. But I mean, I did it intentionally. But I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of customers who...
A lot.
It is very... Even I knew that was going to happen. But even trying to learn both of these products and see which networks they support, looking at these tiny little icons to figure out, and then looking up what the icon means. That's Arbitrum icon. I mean, it's absurd if you know what's going on.
Yes.
And a lot of people are not going, they're just going to think I have dollars. Or maybe they think I have USDC, but they don't know, I have USDC base. And then they might even be confused that they think that base is on Ethereum, so it should work. Actually, that was part of my thinking. Like, maybe it will work.
It's kind of reasonable. Yeah.
Maybe it will work because base is on Ethereum. So the token, I thought maybe it's an ERC-20 token. Maybe it should work, but it didn't work.
Wow.
Now, in theory, I think Cash App engineers can go dig up my money. It's not literally, like, gone, but there's not a product experience for me to get it back. And so...
imagine if you took out a real loan. Like, if you did what we were just saying, you say, okay, I have $10,000 or something, I'm going to go buy this, stock. And you're like, oh, shit, I just lost.
Well, presumably, if I did, like, $50,000, and then, like, Cash App would put the work in to do it. But, to get the money back for that customer.
But how would they even get that back? Because you're sending it to a different address. Like, you're sending it... So, like, they would have to go on, like, support base?
I think so.
Got it.
They have the key, but then they don't have the software support, but they'd add the software support kind of thing. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure, I don't know the future there, but obviously they'll likely support base in the future and that works. So, I mean, right now we're just speaking to that type of integration is coming up soon. Mm-hmm. And in reality, if I actually wanted to get the dollars in Cash App, I would transfer it to Phantom, which I also tested that out and it worked, and then I'd go Phantom to Cash App, right? So,
I can't wait till it's.
Yeah, I can transfer it to Phantom and then do a bridge and then transfer it to Cash App or whatever. But which is what people in the casino do, because if you're in the casino, like, you feel cool doing all this stuff and you feel like you've got an edge. But if you're just trying to do normal, if you're like a normal human being with a normal life trying to do basic stuff, you don't want
just trying to do a little magic.
Yeah, I know. This is beautiful. Anyway, I mean, I think the stablecoin world will move to, like, the bridge.xyz's of the world. Circle has products to make it interoperable. David Marcus's son, Ethan, he has Flashnet, which is building out all these different, supporting all the popular combinations. That'll just keep developing. And I think it's just a matter of time. And then that user experience problem will go away. Same with, like, hiding the gas fees. So I think the UX will get there where you don't have to think about it. It'll just work. You don't have to you personally don't have to hold extra tokens to pay for gas. It'll just work. But what will remain true is that it's centralized actors doing all these swaps, and there will be fees. And obviously the more centralized it is, the more monopoly pricing power they will have for the fees.
Yeah.
Or the more layers you have, the more fees there will be.
I just want to say that this reminds me again of something we've talked about probably many times in the show, but John Pfeffer's 2017 utility token thesis, when he was looking at Bitcoin versus all of the shitcoin networks. And he's like, if you need to, like, get a Chuck E. Cheese token to play the game or a casino chip to play the game, fine, but you're not storing your money in the Chuck E. Cheese token. I actually think this is kind of playing out. I mean, I didn't at the time, I obviously see it in stablecoins. Back then it was still ETH and Sol and all that stuff. But it's interesting to me, like, it kind of seems like that the market is going to continue to bifurcate where either the most radically decentralized value storage and actual decentralized payment network, Bitcoin and Lightning. And then it kind of seems like Ethereum and all these, like, middle kind of trying to be decentralized, and Solana a little bit less decentralized, like, are going to, like, probably eventually just, like, get killed by the other end of the spectrum, which is Base, or where they're headed, and these other, Tempo and all this stuff, which is just, like, a database controlled by a company. Because obviously...
centralized and do it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want decentralized, you got Bitcoin. Otherwise, like let's stop with all the theater. Like, you've already confused regulators for 5 years. Like, yeah, now,
I agree. And that's why the fees will be low.
Zero. Because otherwise, like if I'm doing a payment and I actually do it on Ethereum and it's a $5 payment or something.
That's why last year, you laughed at me, but I said Google Cloud Universal Ledger.
Google's always had the curve.
Smartest play. Just because it doesn't, it's not Dino. It's not decentralized. It doesn't claim decentralized and name only.
Right.
It's just like, it's just a database. Just a database. We have this compliance department. You know, we are compliant. It's a database. It's fast. It's cheap. And we're Google.
Yeah.
And we can be trusted.
Yeah.
Right. So I actually think that's going to serve a need. I think it's better than Base or Tempo, which are like, oh, it's decentralized blockchain.
Sort of.
You know, and it more Dino-like. Yash, by the way, answers, at least at a high level, one of our questions. MPC-based signer network acts as a communication layer between Bitcoin
and
custody and Base, lending smart contracts. So, yeah, I sort of described two sides of that. DK, you brought up the third, which is the communication mechanism between the two. I'd still like to learn more about it to really understand the details, and I would advise anyone else to do so as well if you're going to use this for any meaningful amount of money. But, anyway, Surge looks promising.
By the way,
Cash App nailed the stablecoin integration. Yes, DK.
I have a new, I guess maybe it's like a proposal or something that an AI idea that I would like to use right now with the Surge app, and this might inspire the Surge team or others. So one thing that I've found recently with kind of some of my own development work and, you know, design and adversarial thinking is having a, you know, kind of a canonical design doc out on a GitHub so that other people can sort of chat with it or inquire upon it to clarify their own understanding or point out inconsistencies for me has been helpful. And I feel like if there were maybe a GitHub explaining the adversarial architecture behind Surge so that I, as DK, who like kind of understand Surge, but I'm not fully expert and I want to understand more about the signer network, I've talked to the people involved, but I'd also like to be able to do my own chat with the canonical repository to be able to further understand or kind of explore my misunderstandings around Surge and sort of even ask it to help me understand more about.
But how's that differ from just using opening up ChatGPT or Claude?
Well, I think a lot of times they have like higher level idea about a thing, whereas when it gets down to some of the finer grain details, like just yesterday with my own project, I uncovered a new edge where we didn't have an answer. There was just this kind of an undefined state. And so I was like, okay, well, let's actually do the work to figure out what that state is. So there's like, there should be one place, which is like all of the best thinking of the team that's building the thing. That's like the most detailed version of the thing that then you could point the AI at almost like an AI FAQ. And you could say, here's the canonical doc that explains a system. Now I want to chat to learn more about the edges of this thing.
You know, and that's interesting because it almost, we've talked about like the potential for a new GitHub for a long time. It's almost, I mean, as code moves to natural language, it's almost like more and more the code that you publish is less important than like your like essays or like your like thinking of like how you got there, why you got there. You know, it's kind of interesting because it's like, you know, the document that's kind of keeping Anthropic or Claude in check, you know, is their constitution. It's literally just like an essay. It's like, you know, some liberal, in fact, I actually went to school with one of the guys that's writing it, just like a liberal arts dude that's, you know, philosopher writing this like an essay. But I think that's where we're headed. And maybe every GitHub or every project should have like a constitution, like their values, their high level thinking about what they're trying to achieve that's native for the AI to read. And maybe there's like a new product experience around that. Maybe GitHub is no longer the best place to like, I don't know, like for AIs to gather and like read your values doc or your, you know, high level thinking doc. I don't know what that looks like, but it seems like a shift.
Sprout. We'll talk about that on a future show.
We can talk about it later.
Another job.
That might be kind of the right way to do it. We do some of that stuff there already. So,
yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Well, we want to talk about Zcash, Zcrash, but also go deeper on like the AI stuff too. So I don't know. Where do you want to go next?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things I think we were already mentioning, and I think they're kind of related. You know, we talked about wanting to take a loan to buy AI exposure. And I don't think it's just like, oh, I want a little bit of exposure. Like, I do think, you know, and I'm getting a lot of questions from people around Bitcoin or on MicroStrategy or Stretch, all this stuff. I don't know how in the weeds we want to get, but basically, like, TLDR, you know, we're in the middle of a crash or whatever, like, what's going on? And I think that, I think even Saylor mentioned this today. I do think people are maybe in the Bitcoin community a little bit asleep at the wheel, like how big of a deal the AI transition is. And I know there's debate on this. We don't have to go into like, is it a bubble? Is it not a bubble? Like, I mean, you know, if you really think this is like a civilizational, you know, transition that we're happening through, we're still in the very early days of how much we're spending, right? And so I think over the last 6 years, we've already spent $900 billion in the data build out. That's what's been committed. That's insane. Like to put that in context, that dwarfs in inflation adjusted dollars, not necessarily as a percentage of GDP, but inflation adjusted dollars, every other major build out in the history of peacetime US infrastructure, including things like railroads. Railroads was still a bigger percentage of GDP, but data centers are on the curve. It's going vertical right now to overtake them. Google just announced, I think, what their recent fundraise was, $80 billion, including an at-the-market equity offering. That's crazy for Google. They've been buying back all of their shares for years. Now they're saying, no, we're just going to like flood the market with shares because we don't have enough money to build all the data centers. You saw Anthropic just did another $60 billion raise. You know, OpenAI did their $100 billion raise a little while ago. And I know people can be cynical and be like, oh, it's all going to crash. But like, if you actually are AGI pilled, and you think, no, this is still the early innings of this, you know, it does. I think there's two areas, you know, it causes one to wonder. One is like, is it just temporarily going to suck all the liquidity out of the Bitcoin market? And I do think that's kind of what's happening right now. And you know, I think that's probably why Stretch is trading down a little bit lower today, is even if people still like Bitcoin, they're still bullish Bitcoin, you know, is a great thing. It's like you're watching this once in a lifetime exponential vertical line going off and you don't want to sit on the sidelines. The liquidity has to come from somewhere, right? Which is why, by the way, I think a product like what we were talking about with Surge, where you don't have to sell the Bitcoin, could be really, really powerful in dampening some of that sell pressure. But yeah, I mean, this is just something I've been thinking a lot about. People are texting me sort of left and right. Curious y'all's thoughts.
Well, one first question I have is, why not use leverage?
What do you mean? Like take a loan against the Bitcoin?
Yeah.
I mean, for one thing...
Which is literally what we just said. But like, yeah. So instead of selling my Bitcoin to get an AI exposure, keep my Bitcoin, take out a loan against it, get exposure.
I mean, I think, you know, it is a good option. I think part of it is, like I said, for a lot of people, it's just the friction, right? It's a lot easier just to sell than it is to figure out all of these whatever different hoops they need to jump through. I think... Well, I also think there's a lot of people that don't have access, you know, maybe to the U.S. Infrastructure to buy with. So even if they wanted to, maybe that'd be harder. Although I guess if they sell, they still have to find a way in there. But honestly, I think also part of it is just like leverage is scary at the end of the day. You know, like
I think there's a way to do this in the U.S., Steve, by the way. Like think about all the breakpoints. Like you need to decide if you're going to use Surge, and you recommended using it with toy money right now. No, so.
Let's forget about, I mean, why not forget Bitcoin? Just if people want to invest in AI, they can get leverage by many means.
Like you can mortgage your house, you get.
And I think
no,
people
I mean
are,
like margin. I mean, what do you mean? You take out like businesses, tons of institutions take out loans, right?
I would imagine
you guys are acting like no one's ever used lending before or leverage.
I would imagine a lot of people are doing that too, but I also think you know. We're sitting here talking about leverage as if it's just like a risk-free thing.
We're also like the Bitcoin's tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's 300 trillion in bonds, 150 trillion in stocks, and Bitcoin's 1 trillion. It's tiny. So like totally. It's kind of a joke when we're talking about like,
but
like
it sure
Bitcoin's not going to fund the AI in the world.
It's not, but it sure does seem to me like a lot of people that were holding Bitcoin are exiting that position.
That might be true. I'm just saying, even if all of Bitcoin is sold, then that's like several hundred billion dollars
totally
that you'd get out of the system, right?
And I think that's my broader point. That's tiny.
So most of the AI investment's coming elsewhere. So my only question is like, why can't it just be a little bit more elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to happen too. I think my broader point is oxygen is getting sucked out of everywhere. I think that if there were easier ways to do the leverage, probably that would, you know, dampen some selling for Bitcoin. But I think at the end of the day, my broader point also is like, you know, leverage is not risk-free. And like, it's really like, you know, no one wants to be going through a bear market, watching things go down and be like, oh shit, I need to go find more collateral, post it quickly. By the way, if there's a way to use Lightning Network to post a little bit more quickly, that's always useful as well. But I don't know. It's just something that I think is on my mind, even though the Bitcoin is not going to fund all of it. it does seem like we're in a civilizational transition, and the Bitcoin community, I think, maybe is still not fully grokking how much capital is going to keep flowing. So
a wise friend of mine this morning shared his prediction for the year.
Was this a wise friend of Paul Graham's too? That's almost never wrong about financial. Because I believe he said Ethereum all the way.
Is that the Bitcoin bear market will continue through the summer, but once we have SpaceX IPO and Anthropic IPO and OpenAI IPO, there'll be all these super rich people with exit liquidity from those events. They'll be looking to, even though I'm sure they'll still be very AI, bullish, they'll be looking to diversify, and money will flow back into Bitcoin from all of that this fall.
Interesting. We'll see. The one thing I would just say is, like, every time people have been like, well, and again, I mean, for those of you who don't know, we got the SpaceX IPO, I think next week. And then you've got obviously the other ones coming in fall is what the rumors are. But, I lost my train of thought on that. But we'll see. Every time people have said, it's like this is only going to go this far and then it's going to stop, like with Anthropic's revenues. Like, people didn't want to invest the $100 billion valuation, or from what I heard, like institutions, it's like, $100 billion, that's too rich. There's no way that's ever going to, no software company can ever support that. And it's the next one's $300 billion. The next one's $1 trillion. And, and the revenues are backing it up. Like, the multiples are not crazy at all. And so I think what people are maybe missing is, like, it's not like, it's just like one more like a traditional IPO. It's kind of like tapering out its market. It's like, no, if you actually think the market is like all labor and then all the new labor that's created, like the $1 trillion valuation might be like really
maybe
early.
I mean, revenue is one metric. Yeah. Profit's another.
Sure.
And
sure.
So if you're,
and that's starting
if,
to turn
if,
too.
If you're 20x subsidizing your tokens
right
to juice your revenue, how sustainable is that?
No, it's 100%. But
they all have
saying,
to pay those hardware, the data centers, the chips. There's huge expenses. There's huge CapEx and all this.
Which is why you're seeing all the equity sales and offerings. But anyways, I think my broader point is, for people that have, been asking me, like, I do think that the rotation is real. I think it's still, very exciting for Bitcoin. I don't think anything has changed fundamentally, but I think, it'd be naive to think that, AI is, it's just going to keep going and then it's going to plateau. It's like, it's not what I've seen so far. So.
I couldn't see any top AI.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I'm not aware of anyone predicting a plateau of AI.
There's a lot.
So it's not even a...
Or a crash. There's a lot of people, like the old school kind of Wall Street, New York people, like, this is a bubble. It's like, I don't think you understand what's actually happening here, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, I could imagine like certain crashes or whatever, but that doesn't mean AI is a fad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, there was the dot-com bubble, but the internet wasn't a fad.
Totally. So. And I think this could go way longer than the dot-com bubble.
Yeah. It could, but I think it's definitely related to Bitcoin, but I don't think AI winning means Bitcoin loses.
I think the thing Max is saying, Steve, which I would generally agree with, and it echoes the thing that you're saying, which is Bitcoin is so small compared to any of this that anybody playing in the Bitcoin ecosystem today who has any interest in AI, could easily crash Bitcoin because it's so small relative to the size of the AI opportunities. It's the asymmetry in the size is actually why you could imagine Bitcoin
just like
hitting.
If you're disproportionately weighted towards Bitcoin and you want exposure to something else, high growth, the opposite's true as well. Like the underlying thesis of Bitcoin that I think we hold and many people hold has not been shaken. It's not been disrupted or changed.
Not at all.
So the same logic as to why it's a good investment is retained. So if there's like massively more wealth in this other area of with people and like individuals having newfound wealth, they too will logically want to diversify, and some portion of them will learn and understand, or maybe they already understand why Bitcoin is a great investment, and the money will flow back. That's why I'm not, I mean,
I agree.
Obviously, none
point.
Of us can predict the next few weeks or months or whatever, even a few years, but there's nothing I've seen that shakes the Bitcoin thesis.
Well, okay. So there are two things that I think are
I think it's more just volatility. We're just seeing a reason for a lot more volatility right now, which is like kind of the history of Bitcoin, right?
Exactly. History of Bitcoin.
It's a lot of volatility. I mean, I do think at some point you start to say, you know, I think as long as there's not a dangerous bear market and hash rate, it doesn't concern me. And I think we've talked about that before on the show, even being 10% down, you know, we talked about the security budget. Everything is fine on the hash rate.
Why even now. Like, why would you, even if it goes down 50%, what?
Well, at some point,
you're worried about a reorg attack?
Well, at some point, I do think these things cascade, right? Like, they're like, Bitcoin is still based on confidence and trust. And like, you need confidence and trust. And, you know, I mean, the price is one reflection of that. The security budget is another. Like, if everything keeps going down, like, there is a point at some point where it becomes weakened in security. I don't think Bitcoin will ever die, right? Like, there's another world where, as we talked about, if enough people don't start using the system and don't trust in its value storage capability, maybe it becomes like sort of like a middle ground cypherpunk thing. And it's cool. It's like, you know, some like BitTorrent, like BitTorrent's still around. I think it's still 5% of the internet. Still there, but like Spotify, like kind of, you know, whatever, stole most of the thunder.
But I mean, you have to zoom out a little bit, but the hash rate and the price are related, right?
Yeah.
So, and that thus, and you need less security if there's less money in the system. So,
yeah,
I don't get too shaken about hash rate declines. I mean, this is maybe a good point to bring up Zcash, because yeah, exactly. that's
the actual
there
risk.
There was a huge in the, you know, the past less than 24 hours, there was like almost a 50% and there's like 40 some percent crash of Zcash price. And I what's notable about it, historically there have been altcoins that have literally been reorged like many blocks back, huge security violation. And the price like is unmodified, or you know, doesn't change or even pumps just because it like enters the news and people who hadn't heard of that coin buy it. Whereas Zcash actually crashed. So it's like, oh wow, investors actually care about security now or whatever. But this is different.
Yeah. Well, and so that's what I was going to set up is the second point.
So why is Zcash different?
Well, so I think what's interesting here is, you know, when you also think about AI, and I think it's relevant to Bitcoin too, which is there's the sort of like momentum situation, and then there's the fundamentals. And to your point, Steve, you know, we all agree the fundamentals of Bitcoin have not changed. The value proposition is still there. The technology is still there, et cetera, et cetera. However, you know, I think one thing that gives people a lot of pause and fear is the unknown unknowns that come when when AI enters the scene, when you have models like Mythos and Better that are getting, you know, really good at hacking and potentially finding new flaws, vulnerabilities, and blind spots in our old systems. Now, the Zcash situation is emblematic of what that could look like if there actually is a flaw, right?
But that's not the difference. I mean, that's in a, like, we should talk about the AI stuff.
Yeah.
But the difference I'm talking about with Zcash doesn't apply to Bitcoin.
No, you mean specifically in
auditing the supply.
Yes, yes, right? I agree on that.
And like, that's early on in my study of all this stuff, and I think a lot of other people who are into Bitcoin were concerned about systems like Zcash because you can't audit the supply.
Totally.
And there's this like fundamental tension between
privacy and auditability,
and that's why even though I'm a huge privacy advocate for financial transactions, I would not be for adding that to layer one in Bitcoin.
I agree.
If it means losing the auditability, and I'm not aware of a way to get both.
Yeah.
But
for people who don't know, we should just set up what happened, which is I don't even think it was Mythos. I think it was just like Opus. It was one of the
Opus models. 4.8.
Okay. So the new Opus.
Just to clarify, even take it down a little closer to ELI5, when you talk about auditability, you're saying, I want to know that there are 21 million coins and not any more, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. And when you say privacy, can you give a similar kind of explanation of how to think about the privacy?
An external observer can't look at the blockchain and know that this account paid X amount of money to that account.
Okay.
The historical privacy-focused change, Zcash and Monero, I think it's an issue for Monero, too. Although I'm curious if Monero has popped today. I haven't checked. But, you know, their whole sort of thesis is if we have privacy from sender to sender, what's come along with that? And in the case of Zcash with sealed transactions and Monero's ring signatures, then you can't You can audit the supply or specific transactions to make sure something actually went through, audited. And so in the case of Zcash, you know, it's also kind of amusing because you've had all these, you know, old crypto bros 6 months ago pumping, oh, we need privacy, like Zcash is the thing. And it's just like, here we go again. Who could have ever seen this coming? But I do think the AI thing is very important, right? Because AI was the sort of the pin that popped the bubble, or that, you know, that the last one that broke the camel's back. Opus 4.8, the new Claude model that normal people have access to, found a bug in Zcash that allowed for, at least theoretically.
They hired a human being expert to work with Opus 4.8.
Yeah, of course.
As an audit, and it found this vulnerability. So yeah. All of that was like responsible by them.
Fair.
They've also, as everything I've seen from Zcash, they've been very transparent in their communications, and including just the reality of the situation. But the problem is, the reality of the situation is no one can tell anyone right now how many Zcash there are. Yeah. There literally could be infinite, or like there could be unlimited printed.
It could be like dollars.
And you can think about, in terms of like what could cause Bitcoin to go down, I think this is unlikely, but it is possible that like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, someone could have printed, like in 2023 or whenever Bitcoin pumped, or I guess it was right during the election or whatever, someone could have printed tons of Zcash, no one knows it, and then bought Bitcoin with it. And pumped the price of Bitcoin, which then raises the entire market. And that could be why the price went up.
Yeah.
We don't know.
There's no way to say.
And there's literally no way to know.
Yeah.
No. So that is why I think the price crashed, because you don't know how many Zcash there are. Now they're going to come out with a proposal to move from Orchard to another Orchard or something. And, you know, it's
another ceremony. A
turnstile, and they count the number of coins, and they do have, you asked about this, DK. I mean, they have a mechanism already in Zcash, because this is not the first Zcash vulnerability. They had a vulnerability in the original key ceremony for Zcash. Yeah. It was always, Zcash was a trusted setup from the get-go,
right,
which is another reason I avoided it.
Right.
And sure enough, they had a bug in their original key ceremony.
Yeah.
So they have set up these turnstiles where, you know, there's these shielded coins in one bucket, and you can move them to another bucket. It's kind of like eCash mints in a way, like how you do proof of reserves on an eCash mint. You just have to like move all the coins from one bucket to another bucket, and then you count when you do it. So with Zcash, though, there could have been infinite printing or unlimited printing in a bucket, but the bucket knows how many went into it, and then that's all that can come out. So if I printed a bunch of extra coins and I got mine out first, you guys would be stuck. Even though you had authentic, legitimate Zcash, you couldn't move them to the new Orchard,
right?
Because it only allows the amount that was expected to come out. But at least when you move to a new bucket, you would regain trust that's how many exist.
Yep.
At least at that point in time, because then
you need somebody to decide that. Like, how does that turnstile work? I say your coin is allowed, yours is not.
Well, I don't know how it works, but I mean, like, I believe it just, you know, it's in the protocol. Like it knows how many are in the bucket A, and it only allows that number to go to move to bucket B.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, so it knows how many should be able to be moved. But if there was an inflation bug, presumably there's more in the bucket than should be allowed.
That's
to
what
move.
I just said. Somebody like if I printed a bunch of extra and I got mine out first, you guys would be screwed.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's definitely not a perfect system. I mean, it has all kinds of flaws, but that mechanism exists within Zcash. I think it's what they're imagining to solve this problem, but you know, it still just kicks the ball down the road kind of thing. I mean, like, first of all, if there was an exploit, then there are going to be people who get screwed when they move, go through the turnstile. And then with the new Orchard, or what do they call it, like, there could be another exploit.
Yeah. Yeah. And again,
turnstile, who sets up those rules? I mean, this just seems
exactly.
like
it's more the Zcash Foundation.
And
the developers. I mean, the Monero, Zcash, all these coins are centralized.
Exactly. And that's the broader point, is that it all comes down fundamentally to trust. And I think you make a great point, Steve. It's like, once you go to the new turnstile, how do we know there's going to be another one? And the reality is, this is the point I'm trying to make, is like, AI is just going to keep getting better and better and better. And I actually think, you know, fortunately, Bitcoin has, because the, you know, paranoid developers that people used to make fun of were so, you know, trying to reduce opcodes, make sure there's, you know, auditability, like have been very, very prescient in looking forward to where the future is going. It has far fewer attack surfaces. But I do think one thing this flags for me is the importance of making sure, and I know, you know, for a variety of people in the ecosystem are working on this, but making sure we're getting, you know, audits from Anthropic, yeah, from Mythos, from the new models, because it only is going to get better. And like, you know, Bitcoin, unfortunately, is designed for an adversarial environment. And I do think in the future, you know, Bitcoin's going to do very well because it's the most adversarially sort of hardened thing. But like, I don't know, like all the other sort of shitcoins. And I do think Bitcoin, you know, I really hope we're getting the top of the line audits, because this, you know, the AI stuff is only going to get a lot better at finding vulnerabilities.
Spiral launched a project called Project Loop, yes, which we talked about in the show.
Yep. Right.
And it is.
That's right. Yeah.
It's in action right now.
Yeah. Thank God.
And I can only share, because I mean, it's dealing with sensitive security issues, so I can't reveal. I don't know all the details.
Yeah.
Like, but the high level number, like vulnerabilities are being found.
Yeah. But not critical vulnerabilities like Zcash's, like inflation bug sites.
Well, I guess that's one of my points. It's like that category isn't possible on Bitcoin.
Exactly.
So, Bitcoin Core for a couple of years now introduced a new policy of a commitment to announcing, explaining vulnerabilities, and they provided a policy around that and a schedule, because you need to be like thoughtful and responsible around this. Like, you can't just like announce it right away.
Right.
You need to give time for people to upgrade, and because they can't just push a button and upgrade the network. It's not like a server pushed by Google or something, right? There needs to be enough time. So Bitcoin Core, like many projects, has different severity levels, critical, high, medium, and low, right? And then their policy for communication varies depending on the severity. I think medium and high are announced something like after about a year. So like after there's been two releases with the fix, then they announce it. If it's critical, that's like ad hoc, figure it out in the moment, because it's critical.
Right.
It kind of like the inflation bug from 2018, I think. That's kind of like figure it out as you go, how to fix it, how to upgrade it in real time,
right,
and communicate it. And usually, usually the communication for that is sooner.
Yeah.
And then I think low is like right away or like during the release or something like that.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, and I think a lot of projects have similar types of stances on severity levels and stuff. But I can definitely say Project Loop, we're working with something like 7 or 8 projects right now in this first phase. Lots of vulnerabilities are being found.
Yep.
Some of them important.
Right.
I consider this a really good thing.
I agree.
Because, first of all, it's good that the good guys find it before the bad guys. But it's also good, these bugs exist, right?
Yep.
So it's good that AI can find it.
Yep.
It is good. And I think there'll be this phase where all these longstanding bugs will get stamped out.
Yes.
They'll be found and fixed. And that doesn't mean then from that point on, there'll never be bugs again. But I do think there's like this long window of time, especially if you look at Linux or other like projects that have been around forever, literally bugs that are 10, 20 years old are being found. So there's like this backlog of bugs that exist. They'll all be fixed in a short order of time.
Yeah.
And then in the future, there'll still be bugs introduced and they'll be fixed, but it'll always be a much smaller.
Yes, I agree with that.
Set of
it'll
bugs,
be kind of
right?
The efficient frontier of bug creation and squashing, right?
And then they'll continue to be this sort of like, you know, yin and yang. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the good guys versus the bad guys, and like how much the tools help you to not produce bugs, but the tools will also introduce new types of bugs. And it'll go back and forth. But
right.
I think overall it's quite healthy. When it comes to cryptocurrency, though, yeah, if it's a critical bug that could devastate the entire network,
yeah,
split the chain,
yeah,
and just cause total chaos, that would be very bad. Absolutely, there can be very bad bugs on Bitcoin. Like the 2018, the inflation bug,
yeah,
if it were exploited in a big way, it would have been very bad.
Right.
And I think I don't know, you know, it's one of those things that how it would be social how we figure out how to handle it. And yeah. we probably would figure out how to handle it, but it definitely would hurt credibility a lot. Yes. It would cause total chaos. Like the quantum stuff, if it ever comes to fruition, that will be, you know, messy. But yeah. I think we'll get through it.
Yeah.
And if some critical vulnerability is discovered or exploited in the near term, that would be messy. I do think we'd get through it. And and Bitcoin can't suffer the kind of issue that Zcash just had.
Because we can always audit the supply. That's the big difference. I agree with all of that. And I think, you know, it's something, I think Dhruv talked about this a couple of years ago, where like in general, AI is, you know, going to lead, and Bitcoin in particular, not just Bitcoin Core, but like any service that uses Bitcoin, it's really nice because that's effectively a bounty, right? And so what you're going to see is you probably are going to see like a wave of hacking over the next couple of years. And, you know, not Bitcoin Core, but like, I don't know, like exchanges or like sites that, you know, custody Bitcoin or use Bitcoin in some way, shape or form. And that's going to suck. But in the long run, you know, Bitcoin and, you know, the services around it will survive or new ones will emerge. And software, the quality of software is just going to get exponentially better. And like the internet's going to be a much like safer place eventually. But we're going to go through this kind of, like you said, this one time, you know, kind of rocky transition, I think.
So, in getting back to like, the Bitcoin price is going down. Why? And yep. like we pontificated, one reason is, people are selling so they can put money in AI. I have no idea. I don't think any of us know. We don't have data.
Yeah.
My intuition says that's a small reason why, not a big reason or main reason why. I suspect it would be a bigger reason that people are worried about quantum and AI finding critical vulnerabilities.
Yes.
And like you can imagine, even if you believe in Bitcoin, but you're worried about that, let's take some off the table.
Yeah.
Go through this. I mean, what I just said, if you believe in what I just said, like, you know, where there's this window of time
yes.
where there's this huge backlog of bugs
yeah.
that will be found.
Yeah.
Hopefully the good guys find it, not the bad guys.
Right.
Hopefully the bad guys don't find a critical severity that gets exploited. And then we'll catch up.
Yeah.
And then it'll be largely in the past.
Yeah.
So take some money off the table,
right.
wait for that phase to end, then put it back re-enter. In.
Yeah.
Right. I can imagine that psychology happening with, especially with someone who's a trader,
yeah.
someone who just is overexposed to Bitcoin might want to do that.
Yeah.
But they've not lost belief in Bitcoin, and they will be back.
100%. I think it's important to say, like, you know, like there's always going to be the cat and mouse game, but like this is probably the next year is like a one-time navigation from like crappy human software to like AI software.
That's why I'm proud of the Spiral team. And
it's awesome.
Elias in particular from our team is doing the lion's share of the work. And I think it's a super valuable project. It's a very good ROI project.
I could not agree more.
I mean, he's working hard, but it's not that big a lift by us.
Yeah.
I think it is really helping out projects, and it's also helping our interactions with developers in these other projects.
Yeah.
They're gaining belief in the value of doing this, and also the quality of Loop is improving because it's still not perfect. Meaning, it's still AI. Finds a ton of problems.
Right.
Most, though, are like either low priority or, yeah, we already knew about that. Or it's not that applicable in the real
right.
world. So sifting through all that and filtering that. Another thing that AI is getting wrong that's we're having to figure out how to improve is like classification. Like, you know, saying something is high severity when it's really medium or low, or vice versa.
Yeah.
We've seen examples of where it's like medium. And then when human experts look at it, they're like, it's actually high.
Yeah.
So AI can improve that, or usage of AI tools can improve. So Loop is trying to optimize that as well.
Yeah. No, it's incredible public service.
Cool.
What about Cloudflare stuff? Do you see this HTTP?
Tell us.
Been,
oh, yeah, yeah, actually. Yeah,
agents,
go for it.
Agents have overtaken humans in HTTP requests on Cloudflare. I think one of the guys maybe in charge of Cloudflare, I think he said he was expecting this to be 2 years out, and it happened this week.
Yeah.
So I think for a while we've talked about the idea that the internet probably becomes sort of more of an agent place base, and we sort of sit at the edges and don't necessarily use the internet in the way that we have before. We maybe don't use browser and application, all these things. And we just kind of like interact with agents that do all of the main kind of internet communication work?
The main question I had about that, I definitely agree with the trajectory, but I just wonder if that's somehow inflated, like almost like a DOS attack or like, or if I just spin up AI or like a group of AIs and they just do a zillion.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like in Lightning Network.
Is it productive?
You do this probing to like figure out channel balances. So it inflates what looks like the number of payment attempts, but 99% are not real world payment attempts. So I just wonder if that number is 100x inflated somehow. But even if it is, then it is actually 2028 or whatever his original prediction is when it legitimately crosses over. But I think it would be good to know what the metrics actually are and can they be scrubbed.
Yeah, part of that, it could be inflated by an explicit DOS, or it could just be that humans only have like a singular line of attention to do a thing. I can go to a browser, I can type in a URL, I can navigate to a place, whereas I could set an agent up and say, hey, go check the top 5 or 10 travel sites for this flight and check it every hour and tell me if the price ever declines by 10% and then go buy it. And it's kind of like a legitimate kind of productive use case, but it's something that can just be running 24/7 for a week and generate tons more requests than I would do as an individual.
In parallel,
And that dovetails like with Anthropic's revenues growing so quickly, right? Because the idea, it's not that it's new businesses, as you've said, it's old businesses that now are able to run 100x or 1,000x more agents.
But I think a correction / optimizations starting to occur now, because like Dario, the CEO of Uber, was just interviewed and asked about this. And, you know, he's pro AI, but he's like, you know, we blew through our annual budget in the first quarter. And I think Amazon blew through their annual budget in a month or whatever. And everyone's blowing through the budget. I mean, the joke now is like, all those people you fired, you're paying more money for the tokens than the people you fired.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's actually, you know, you're losing money by firing the people. But I mean, the good news is that open models are becoming more and more competitive. And I think AI systems are getting smarter and smarter with dynamic model selection and doing query complexity to know how to farm them out for the user. And then so when you have simple queries, don't give it to Opus 4.8.
Yep.
Give it to the super cheap one running on your computer,
yes,
which is essentially free.
Yes.
And right. And then when you have a hard task, give that to the frontier model.
And this is what this I've been saying. Model routing is like the thing. Like, where
100%.
Which model should we use for this particular thing? That's going to be the hub where everything aggregates.
And right? If you want to do that in an open place, this is what makes me very bullish on denominating in an open source money for that, which is Bitcoin. Guys, I know we're almost at the end. I have to pee crazy bad. I'll be right back. I'm very sorry.
I think we're going to end the show. This will be the first show we'll end without Max.
Without Max. Okay. If you want to call it, we can call it.
We don't have the on-air sign on. Fortunately, no one came in the studio.
Oh.
I'll drop with Max out of the studio, I'll drop a little bit of alpha for a future episode. We'll talk in a future episode about Spiral working on AI. We've maybe flirted with that concept in past shows. Yep. It's a little bit more official now. So we'll talk about that in future episodes. And we'll talk about dynamic model selection, query complexity, projects from NVIDIA and Spiral. There'll be some good stuff on future episodes.
And we already mentioned Sprout. We're going to do a little more on that.
That's another thing. There's a lot of exciting stuff coming up.
Yeah. A lot of exciting stuff, both in AI and in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Billy likes our ending. I think he likes our ending because Max went to the bathroom.
Oh, darn.
We're gonna try to end it without you, Max, but you're back. You missed. But I just dropped more alpha.
Alpha.
I've been slamming waters in the walk over here trying to stay cool.
So
Jesus,
the alpha you missed. No, I mean, you already know. You know that Spiral is taking on AI work. So we'll talk about that in the future episode in a lot more detail. But also some really interesting investigation recently around dynamic model selection with NVIDIA and Spiral.
Ooh, that's very exciting. And again, I mean, something that makes me so excited there is, you know, we've been in this era of tokens are free, but if you want to do that in an open way, right? And I think this is where we're getting to. Like, it seems like something like, you know, on a substrate, like something like Nostr, using an open source substrate for money like Bitcoin, all of a sudden, I think you're going to see, you know, when you have the autonomous agents have to go do the routing, right? Like, where are the autonomous agents going to do theirs? They're not going to plug into a company. I think there's a big opportunity for all this all to be done with Bitcoin in the open. So I'm excited.
All righty. I think that's
it. And I am back. So we're here. A traditional ending, you guys get.
Traditional ending. All right. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Well, next
have a
time.
Good one. See ya.